would like to read?
I'll read.
All right. Kim, why don't you read through 10?
Okay. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, and that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Xerxes to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could stand them, because fear of them fell upon all people, and all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work, helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For this man, Mordecai became increasingly prominent. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with a stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. And in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also, I read this last week.
I think you did. Congratulations.
I'm lying up and just listening.
You could just say the 10 sons of...
And the 10 sons of Hamath, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, they killed. But they did not lay a hand on the plunder.
All right. Leanne, would you read through verse 19?
Sure. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan, the citadel, was brought to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan, the citadel, and the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It shall be granted. Or what is your further request? It shall be done." Then Esther said, "If it pleases the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do again tomorrow according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows." So the king commanded that this to be done. The decree was issued in Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men at Shushan, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives and rest from their enemies and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day as well as on the 14th day, and on the 15th day of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled town celebrated the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day of gladness and feasting, as a holiday, and for sending presents to one another.
Okay, Michelle, would you read through verse 28?
And Mordecai wrote these things and sent letters unto all the Jews that were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both nigh and far, to enjoin them that they should keep the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same yearly, as the days wherein the Jews had rest from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to gladness, and from mourning unto a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, and of sending portions to one to another and gifts to the poor. And the Jews undertook to do as they had begun, and as Mordecai had written unto them, because Haman, the son of Agagite, the enemy of all Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast a cure, that is, a lot, to consume them and to destroy them. But when the matter came before the king, he commanded by letters that his wicked device, which he had devised against the Jews, should return upon his own head, that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. Wherefore they called these days Purim, after the day of Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, and of that which they had seen concerning this matter, and that which had come unto them, the Jews ordained, and took upon them, and upon their seed, and upon all such as joined themselves unto them, so that it would not fail, that they would keep these 2 days according to the writing thereof, and according to the appointed time thereof, every year. And that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city. And that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor the remembrance of them perish from their seed.
All right. Terry, would you read from there through chapter 10?
So Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, along with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm this second letter concerning Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Xerxes, words of goodwill and assurance to establish these days of Purim at their designated times, as Mordecai the Jew, Queen Esther, had decreed for them, and as they had established for themselves and their descendants in regard to their times of fasting and lamentation. Esther's decree confirmed these regulations about Purim, and it was written down in the records. King Xerxes imposed tribute throughout the empire to its distant shores. In all his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai to which the king had raised him, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Media and Persia? Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews and held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews, because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews.
All right. That last bit is really interesting. Don't you wish we had those chronicles?
Mm-hmm. I do, yeah.
But doesn't it remind you of what all we've been through with Esther, that so much we don't know? We've been given what we need to know. The Lord has given us what we need to know. And it seems that what we've studied, even with all the things we don't know, have pointed us to God. And so there's a reason, I'm sure, that we don't have those chronicles. It would be interesting reading, I'm sure, to think now Mordecai's second in command, and there were records of what he did as the king's vizier. I think that's how you say. I always think of Aladdin. When I think of Haman, you know, the king's vizier was quite the wicked one, wasn't he? So just to recap, in chapters 9 and 10, so we have come to the time when the Jews could defend themselves. Remember, the decree that Haman had sent out was could not be revoked, so the Jews could be attacked, and the decree was to annihilate them, but fortunately the king listened to Esther, and there was a new decree that also could not be revoked, that the Jews could defend themselves. So what, let's talk about some points, just speak up about anything in maybe the first few verses through that long list of Haman's sons in chapter 9. So what's going on here? We've come to the 12th month, the month Adar, and the 13th day.
Well, the enemies thought that they were going to win, mm-hmm. be successful, but it says the Jews had assembled in their cities to attack those seeking their destruction. We don't know. Were there Jews killed? We just don't know. Do we?
We don't know.
We don't know.
That's
just another
unknown.
Remember when I asked, remember the movie after watching that movie? There was someone talking to Mordecai, and I don't remember which character it was, about the purity of the of their seed, of the Jew, when Esther would be taken to the palace. And I never thought about it until that moment. Did she ever conceive a child? And we don't know.
We don't
Does
know
Does anybody
that.
In here have any, have they read anything? We just don't know.
From what I understand, there's really not historical records of Esther. Only the Bible records. So that's one reason that some scholars believe this is fiction. It's fiction to bring out God's providence, but they don't believe it's a true historical record. But that's one of the reasons that they believe that. So, as far as I know, we don't know if she ever had children. Interesting. And he didn't live too many more years when he was assassinated by kinsmen. All right, so there, the Jews, it says, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. So remember, it wasn't just Haman who was the enemy of the Jews. There were many people who did not like them. and who wanted them exterminated. So, all right, what else?
I think it's interesting at the end of chapter 8, they had a feast of light and gladness and joy, and they hadn't fought yet. It
seems
like they were counting their chickens before they hatched to me.
You would talk about chickens,
but maybe it wasn't a fair fight they won, so I don't know if God was on their side then, too. But it's weird that they had this happiness before they went into battle.
Well, you remember why they had the joy and happiness? This is right after.
I think it was when Haman died and Mordecai was promoted.
Mordecai was promoted, okay, and the edict was out.
Yeah.
So it gave them hope, I think, Sarah, that, okay, we don't have to just stand there and take it, and they're going to come through and slaughter, and we can't do anything about it. But I think that gave them hope, you know, that we can do something about this. Anybody else have a thought about that?
I have a question.
Sure.
Not too long ago, you said there was no historical record, and so scholars think it's fiction. When you say think it's fiction, you mean just Esther, or basically the Bible, they say?
Well, especially this book.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, there are some people who think other parts of the Bible are fiction or the whole thing, but no, I think
this one
in particular.
Because it doesn't have a historical record.
There's no, you know, except for Xerxes. So it would be kind of like the novels that we read that are historical fiction. Mm-hmm. So there
based
are
better.
True story. It's a, based on a true story, maybe in a movie we watch based on a true story.
Okay.
Maybe so. I know. I worked with a young man one time that said that he wouldn't believe until there was enough archaeological evidence. And I thought, well, you know, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. Well, he wanted more. It wasn't enough. It needed to be all. And hopefully his mind has changed at some point along the way. That was many years ago.
So I think sometimes the world, you know, we forget about that word faith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard for all of us at different times in our lives to believe some of the things that we read about in here. I mean, God completely allowing the complete total destruction of men, women, and children. I just try not to dwell on it. And just try to, God knew what he was doing for whatever reason, and try not to let that particular hesitancy on my part keep me from having a faith that God's going to, it's all going to work out just the way he said it is.
I think
but
so.
There are times it's hard. But we forget
it
about,
is.
You have to learn that word faith. He tells us to Kaylee all the time, faith. Faith is a big word, and it's a serious word.
And if you're not used to hearing that or taught it, if you weren't taught what faith really is, that might be a difficult thing. I guess it would be, but I'm just so encouraged to know that God sees the picture I don't see. He sees the big picture. And to me, that's comforting. I don't have to know everything. I don't have to have all the evidence. I have enough. And I hope and pray that I'll believe that way the rest of my life.
And we don't have to solve all the problems.
No. It's comforting to know that God sees up ahead, and I really don't think I want to.
And if God wants us to know everything, maybe it's because God would know we would become big-headed. And we wouldn't need him anymore.
Yeah.
If we knew everything and had all the answers, then we don't need him to rely on.
And there are too many details and intertwining factors that go into life. My life is one, but intertwined with everybody else, I don't even want to go there. Thank you, God, that He is big enough to take care of those things.
We're given encouragement. I mean, Christ Himself gives us encouragement. And Thomas, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm.
John, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed. So
that's a good one. Okay, and then Haman's sons are killed, and the numbers are beginning to be reported to the king, and he seems to be a little bit surprised, isn't he? If there are that many people killed within the walls, I wonder how many have been killed out in the provinces. And what surprising thing does he do next? He hears about the numbers of the people that are being killed. And what does he do? What?
He asks Esther if there was anything else she needed.
Do you find that interesting? Okay, she has gone to him twice, right? And to see her out there in the court, waiting to see him when he knows that she should not be doing that, unasked for. He hasn't called her. And now he's hearing the reports, and he turns to her and says, "Now, Esther, what else? What else would you like?" That's very interesting. And here he's talking about people being killed.
Make another point.
Okay.
I can't remember your name.
Terry
said something which kind of struck me, because a few weeks ago I was struggling with the fact. I was struggling with why in this book of Esther, you know, it doesn't end well.
Okay.
Only because I don't like revenge being extracted. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was like, I mean, I didn't understand it, and especially this part where, you know, people died and she still wants his sons killed and whatever. And you just made a point about faith, and incidentally, like before that point, I was always thinking, yes, faith is, you know, just believing that God exists, the existence of God. But you said something that struck me, that faith also requires us to believe that whatever is His will is the right way. So, I mean, before I was reading this, I was like, I really understand when people say that, you know, the Bible condemns, you know, slavery or murder, mm-hmm. and revenge, etc., especially in the Old Testament. I mean, in the New Testament, we have stories of grace, but as Christians today, we are called to embrace the whole Bible for learning. So I'm like, what are we learning in this? Are we learning to go out and, you know, kill people who, you know, disturb us in some
right.
way or the other? And I'm like, okay, maybe this is how I should deal with it. You know, I just need to leave it alone. Because honestly, I remember, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, and last week we spoke about, you know, how Esther, it was last week, how Esther decided how she's going to, you know, do all these things. I mean, even with even when she killed Haman, maybe in a way you could say, yes, he was the one, whatever. But then to go all this way and not just have him, but have his children, and, you know,
and remember, one of the, yes, you're right, and to make that connection with what Terry said, that we need to have the faith that God knows.
Yeah.
And His will be done. And remember that Haman was an Agagite, an Amalekite, and way back when they gave the Israelites a lot of problems and wouldn't let them pass through their land, God said He was going to destroy that people.
Okay.
And He tried to do that through Saul, King Saul. And Saul did not kill everybody.
Yes.
Okay? So here we've got Haman and his family are still lingering. So I believe this is all part of God's plan to finally annihilate the Amalekites. And the fact, too, that when you say the revenge, it was actually defense. That's the other thing that we need to keep in mind. When the Jews killed the people, it was in defense, not for revenge. At least that, you know, God will judge their hearts about that. But that was the point from last week that we needed, that stuck with me as I was studying, that this edict was for them to defend themselves.
And isn't that because there still had to be a remnant?
Yes.
And if the enemies had been successful, that would have wiped out all of God's chosen. And so through God's power and grace, he just, this is the way it kind of worked. It worked out, or not kind of, but it did work out, that the Jews were still going to be a people, and his people, and be alive, and be...
And this was all in that, you know, that first lesson was about the preservation of the nation and what the different stories that we've read in the Old Testament where God preserves his nation. And this is just another case of that, where it looked like it was all over for the Jews. And the Lord's hand intervened and protected them. All right, so we know that the Jews turned things around, and God did that for them. Okay, so really the rest of the chapter is about that, and then Mordecai and Esther decreed this Feast of Purim, and they decreed that there should be days of feasting and gladness, and days for sending gifts of food to one another and gifts to the poor. And the Jews accepted this. They began to do this, and it has been continued throughout the generations. It is celebrated now. I put together a few slides. It says the Jews firmly obligated themselves and their offspring, and all who joined them, that without fail they would keep these 2 days according to what was written at the time appointed every year, that these days be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every clan, province, and city, and that these days of Purim should never fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. So, in one way, they were commemorating, they were celebrating God's protection and deliverance of them right then, but they were also commemorating what God is able to do. Let's see if I can... Do I have to use the mouse?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I don't know why I raised that... Okay, so I'll put a calendar up. Remember, Passover was in the first month, and that's Nisan, or Nisan. And then Purim is in the 12th month, Adar. There are times when, I don't understand, I didn't get in depth in my research, but when they have a leap year, sometimes they have a double month. And when it's Adar, when Adar is the double month, then they will have, sometimes they'll have what they call Little Purim in that first one, but it's usually the main celebration is in that last month. All right. These are just some pictures of lots. Remember, Haman cast lots, so we roll dice. We don't know a whole lot about what the lots were or how the lot system worked, but these on the left, those irregular irregular shaped ones are sheep knuckles. And that was many times what they used. It's said today that Purim is one of the most joyous and fun. Believe me, when you look at the research on what how they celebrate Purim. Remember the first banquet that Xerxes gave, and he said there would be no compulsion in the drinking, that everybody drank as he wished? Well, they're expected to.
Wow.
It's their Oktoberfest.
Yeah. So, they consider it a carnival, a festival. It is commanded that they read the Book of Esther during Purim. So the Megillah is the scroll of Esther. And this is just a group of people listening to the reading. They howl, boo, hiss. They use noisemakers called groggers whenever the name Haman comes up in the reading. Mm-hmm. They to drown out the name of Haman. They dress up in character. Here's a picture of carnival. I read in one place that it's always been a tradition that they dress up as the different characters in the stories, but it has kind of evolved into where they dress up as anything. Nowadays it's Harry Potter and Batman and whatever they want to. Sounds like a little deviation from Purim. They wear masks. This is the giving of gifts. They make baskets to give to each other, to fellow Jews, and to the poor. It's said that there should be at least two items in the basket that are ready to eat. And they're commanded to have a meal. And then these cookies they make, Haman's Sashen. Haman's hats or Haman's pockets, they're always triangular shaped, and they're filled with some kind of a fruit, prunes or apricots, sometimes poppy seeds. And you can go online and find recipes very easily. Okay, so that is a little bit about Purim today.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So then God didn't. He isn't the one who said you are going to have this feast.
No, and that's, you know, that's been a question too, but a lot of scholars feel like that's not a problem. You know, that most of their feasts were God ordained. Mm-hmm. And this one, I think there is one other one maybe that was not.
Inspired the writing of the book, mm-hmm. which orders them to do feast, would it not be in a roundabout way that he actually ordered the feast, but not the changing of it that has happened in the modernization of it?
Possibly. I don't know the answer to that, but that's an interesting point.
Probably one of the few feasts that is not associated with an animal sacrifice. So if you mm-hmm. see Passover, they have an animal sacrifice dedicated to God. This is like a civil, the way I see it, it's more like a Christmas in our days. Some kind of civil tradition, family oriented. Mm-hmm. It's not dedicated to God. God did not require to have sacrifices. I don't think it's got any religious. It's more of a civil, traditional remembrance.
Yeah, it's a remembrance of him, though, and his protection, even though we're not told, actually, we're not told that, but
actually, that's a very interesting point, because it's almost like Esther is a written example of the Jewish migration, evolving, whatever you want to call it, into what the Jewish traditions are today. You've got Purim, and then between the silence of the Bible, you've got Hanukkah established.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so what are some lessons we've learned? I would let y'all. What have you learned from? I'll just start with one. I think when we make the point that Vashti was right to refuse the king because of her modesty, I think that's wrong. The Bible doesn't tell us that, does it? I think Esther there's so much silence in Esther. We have read reports that Vashti was as evil and wicked as any of them and promiscuous. She may have been having her own little orgy at the time with her banquet. So there's so much we don't know. I think we have to really be careful. The point of Esther is God's providence and his preserving of the lineage. And I just don't think we can, maybe we can make a quick point. I used to think, yeah, that's really neat, but I'm not sure we can do that. Because we can make another point about that. We can speculate all day long about why we think Vashti refused. And there could be several points. So I don't think mine would be any better than yours. And we just have to be careful. Does that make sense? Okay. What are some other lessons we've learned?
You talk about the oath thing. I can't speak today. But how real Esther was in the history. And 929 actually kind of gives her genealogy that she's the daughter of Abihail. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's got some kind of historical reference kind of tells me it's probably a historical person. Uh-huh. I don't see so much of this book as being mythology or
fiction.
Fiction.
I think some of them that believe that, I mean, they believe there's, you know, historical fact. It's because, I mean, we know King Xerxes lived. I think it's just that you can take a story and make it into fiction by adding things to make a point. Does that make sense? You add little details to make a point about God's providence. So, but yes, the author went to detail, didn't he or she,
yeah,
about.
She's the daughter of that lady and the cousin,
right,
his name,
mm-hmm,
and he wrote the book, and it kind of tries to root it in some kind of historical,
mm-hmm,
time.
Are there other lessons for us?
God will always protect his people.
All things work together for good,
yeah,
to those who love the Lord. And this, sometimes he works through us whether we're doing the right thing or not. Remember, some of these characters were not God-fearing people, but he used them as his tools, didn't he? He used the Jews, he used Xerxes, he used Haman. I mean, we can go back through and just love all the coincidences and the turn of events that we see. That would be wonderful to go back through in one lesson and see all those details that we saw each week. The ironies and the sleepless night. Oh, that's just one out of many that God used to turn these events.
If you ladies would like to see that, watch the movie, just let me know and we'll do that.
I'd like to watch it.
Yes.
Is it on cassette or DVD?
Pardon?
You said, is it on a cassette or DVD? You said,
yeah,
because
DVD.
DVD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She was afraid it was VHS. I know. That's right.
It's on cassette on
a lot of the big ones. Yeah. cassettes. Yeah, uh-huh. I have a lot of those. Does anybody have any use
you know,
for them?
We have a lot of those too.
But I do have it is on DVD.
Okay, so anybody wants to see that movie with Judy, let her know.
One thing that struck me is how Esther was very, once she decided she was going to go before the king and go on with this plan, she was very methodical and very patient. She prayed, she fasted, she consulted Mordecai, she didn't rush into, she plotted how everything mm-hmm. should work. Sometimes I think, personally, you want to rush and just make a decision and be done with it, rather than really considering and seeking God's wisdom and wisdom mm-hmm. of others.
That's right. I remember calling a friend about something that was disturbing me, and the first thing she said was, "Have you prayed about it?" And that has stuck with me. She didn't need to hear it until I had prayed about it and was able to talk about it wisely, and to let God's will work with me. So, two, I think, I've always said growth is painful, isn't it? We don't like to go through things, do we? But once Esther made that decision that, okay, I need to do this. I don't want to see my people die. If I perish, I perish. She began to mature. And we see a lot of change and a lot of growth in her, I believe. Do you think?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sheila? What I learned too was in the beginning when you talked about the book is about the preservation of the Lord Jesus Christ. I learned from you about that he always has to find the remnant when you went through all
mm-hmm. That is a major theme of the Old Testament and even the New Testament, because we are his remnant. Those who will be saved are his remnant. There was a need for that remnant, for Christ to come through that remnant, and he was not going to let anything get in the way. There were what we look and see as close calls, but God knew. It was just a matter of what method he chose to
protect. Well, and Mordecai said to Esther, if you don't do this, deliverance will arise from somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
And that makes us think that he was aware.
Yeah.
He was aware of that lineage and what God would do, and that maybe he had remembered his ancestors talking about the various things that God had done throughout the years. Well, we need to discuss...